I watched as BT placed a leg inside the opening. That alone seemed to take up most of the room. When he got his other leg in, they were definitely scraping the outer edges of the chimney. He was going to have to do some contortionist shit if he was ever going to get his chest and shoulders through. Even Sanders had taken note of his descent. I could see him doing the math in his head as his expression changed from mildly concerned to truly doubtful. He went over and shut the bedroom door just as the gas was nefariously climbing the stairs like a slivering serpent cascading over each riser, making its way up, step by step, until it could finally choke off our airways. Then I wondered, with all the equipment that Knox had been using, was it possible he'd just popped a nerve gas canister into the house? Because in that case, we were going to die a horrible death. That shit would seep through the cracks around our magical trapdoor and come after us brick by brick until it hit our air. Then we would bleed out through every orifice and eventually even our skin. I'd seen firsthand the effects of this particular way of dying. There was a reason most nations, even the crazy ones, had banned its use, even though everyone stockpiled it. I'd been so fixated on watching the insidious gas work its way under the door, I had not even realized BT was no longer in sight. "He made it?" I asked no one in particular. "You're up," Winters clapped my shoulder. "Rats are on the way," Sanders said helpfully, stepping back from his view of outside. "Nerve gas, death by rabbit incisors, or Satan's asshole. I really wish there was a door number 4. "Huh?" Winters asked. "Fuck, I hate it when I talk out loud when I don't mean to." I went for the asshole. I figured if there was anything in there that could have got me, BT would have been like the world's biggest colon brush and just scraped it all clean. The panic didn't hit me until I dipped my head down, under, and into the fireplace proper. Things got real small, real fast. "Get your ass in there, Marine," Sanders said with enough authority. I became that kid again with a flat top and a rifle. "Yes, sir," I mumbled as my dangling foot finally found purchase and I put weight on it. In my perfect, updated vision of the zombie apocalypse, I would be with my family, friends, and a brigade of Marines as we defended a wide, moat-surrounded castle in the English countryside. The moat would be stocked with bass. There would be fruit and vegetables in the courtyard. Hell, my grandkids would climb stunted apple trees. We would only shoot game. We'd have more food and ammunition than we could ever hope for. Clear fields of vision for a quarter mile. And not an enemy in sight because we had done such a thorough job of eradicating them, or at least we'd been able to stay under their radar. Instead, we were being chased relentlessly, and I was currently in a vertical fucking tomb. BT reached up to grab my leg. At first I thought maybe it was to pull me down because I was going too slow, but it was actually for reassurance. It worked. I was thankful for it, and it brought my mind back to the business at hand. By the time I made the two-story drop, I was coated with a thick layer of sweat, and according to Kylie, I was the pasty gray color of old Elmer's glue. She pointed down a corridor that was about the width of my shoulders and said Biddeford was waiting. I felt better by the time we were all in the shelter/grow room. It was decent-sized, 20 by 20 with an 8-foot ceiling. The fact that it had no windows and was underground was beginning to unravel my psyche at the edges, and I could only hold that off for so long. As much as I would have liked to hang out there and regroup, I knew resting comfortably was out of the question. The walls would begin their slow press inwards, and the ceiling would invariably begin to shrink down. It would be slow at first, almost imperceptible. But quarter inch by quarter inch, it would come down until I woke from a slumber to find it pressed up against my nose and I would not be able to do much more than wiggle my toes. "Talbot, you listening to me?" It was BT. I was busy looking at the ceiling. I knew that if I kept doing that, it would not be able to move. Sort of like a game of red light, green light. "I'm with you, man," I told him. "Not what I asked, but okay. We're leaving now. There's a tunnel up ahead. You're going to have to low-crawl through it. I'm told it's bigger than the chimney." Deer in the headlights, kid lost in Walmart, parent looking for his lost kid in Walmart, I had all that accumulated paralytic anxiety surging through me. Tripp's spelunking adventure was still vividly fresh in my mind. I looked around and did not see any vats of lard, so that was a good sign, right? "Mike," Winters is going to go first and secure the other house. You're going in right after him. That clear? Sanders asked, right in my face. I nodded because that was the appropriate thing to do. Really wasn't feeling it, though. Autopilot, Talbot. Don't think, just do. That should be second nature to you. BT was doing his best to assuage my fear. I found it amazing. When I should have been thinking, I often just acted, but now that I needed to just act, I was thinking. When the day came, I met my maker. I was going to ask for a refund, or at least leniency because of all the head maladies that I'd been given or had been afflicted with. There were two blinks of a light from Winters when he made it through to let me know it was safe to go. You got this, Dad, Travis told me. It's barely 20 feet across. Close your eyes and low crawl like you mean it. You'll be through in 10 seconds, Sanders said. Could you order me through, please? Talbot, get your fucking ass through that opening or I'm going to have you cleaning latrines with your tongue, Sanders said. Yes, sir. I took his advice, kept my eyes closed, and moved with a mission. I may possibly have broken a land speed record. Didn't hurt that when I was halfway through, I heard gunfire. It was muffled but distinguishable. There are certain sounds that trump even the voices in your head. Not coming this way, Winters whispered when I got through. I think they're just randomly shooting at the house, or maybe some of the people aren't so willing to go in. Can't imagine why, I said as I checked my rifle. We'd come in through a panel behind a wall-mounted water heater. Neat trick, I said, as I saw how tightly it fit together when it was swung back in place. The relief I was feeling was palpable. Do you mind? It was Meredith who was trying to come out. Sorry, I helped around. Winters held his hand out and down at me. Have everyone be quiet. Someone is in the house, he whispered and pointed up. We could hear the sound of footfalls above us. He pulled out a large knife and sidestepped out of the utility room we were in. I followed him to the doorway, watching as he moved to the stairs. BT sounded like a freight train rolling through a tunnel. I think he was cutting his own wider path through. I wasn't so far off the mark. When he popped out of the wall, his shirt was dirty and ripped up around the shoulders. Shh, I put my finger to my lips, effectively defusing the swear bomb he was ready to let go as he climbed out. Bassie, I'm going to check out the basement. Go on and check upstairs. We heard the man that was going to try and expose us shout out to the person he was with. There was a response, though it was difficult to tell whether he'd said can do or fuck off. Winters was under the open-framed wooden staircase. I had my rifle trained on the upper steps. When the door opened, sunlight streamed through. I pulled back, fearful that he would see me. He paused at the top, not sure if maybe he sensed something, but more likely he was waiting to see if any zombies sprang out. He placed a foot one step down, then another, before pausing again. He bent over, leaning into the darkness so that he could look around the nearly barren space. I was too far in the shadows for him to see me. Winters was pressed up against the wall, doing his best to impersonate concrete. I'd know what it was later because I would try to pry it from the intruder's mostly cold, dead fingers. A Heckler & Koch 123 machine gun. Wasn't sure what it was when I was looking at it, other than it looked wicked and extremely dangerous. Made my AR look slightly anemic, like maybe it should eat a little more red meat. He came down another step, slow and cautious. He knew something was up, could probably feel it in his bones. Then it dawned on him. The most vulnerable place for him was the stairs. He turned, and his rifle was pointed down, pretty much where Winters was. Not much chance of avoiding a hail of bullets should he decide to pull that trigger. Back to not thinking. I put my rifle down and stood with my hands up in the air. I'm here, unarmed. Don't shoot. He turned quickly. I was staring straight down that barrel, topped by a smug smile. I knew you were here. Could smell your fear. Not sure if he would have continued his victory speech, because this was when Winters stabbed him through his calf. Must have severed everything that kept him standing because he collapsed faster than a teenage girl on the Ed Sullivan Show the day the Beatles played. His head struck 6 steps down at terminal velocity. Either the wood cracked or his skull did. Either way, he was out cold. I ran over and dragged his body away and into the shadows, though how anyone was going to miss that blood trail was beyond me. Had to have been a foot wide. He was going to bleed out long before he ever regained consciousness. On a scale of ways to go, this was one of the better. We had everyone through by the time Bastley finally decided to see if his friend found anything.
"Yo, Craig, you find anything?"
"Yeah, check it out," I mumble-yelled in the utility room, hoping that the diffusion of my voice would lead him to believe it was his friend, or at least associate. "Better be some fucking food, I'm starving." We could hear Bastley trudging through the house.
"Craig's!"
Winters ran up the stairs just as Bastley shouted down. I watched as the Marine brought the near-sword knife over his head and chopped down. Not gonna lie, I was pretty happy I didn't see it connect. Heard it, though. That wet, sickly sound as it sliced through the side of Bastley's face and lodged into his shoulder produced all the visual I needed. There was a keening, hitching sound, as though the hungry Bastley was fed something I'm sure he had no desire to eat. Winters yanked the blade free from the neck and drove it through his ribcage and into his lungs in an effort to keep the man from alerting anyone else who might be nearby. I was going up the stairs just as he was easing the petrified, dying man to the ground. I felt for the guy as I stepped over him and out into the hallway to cover Winters, but when you set out to harm others, it shouldn't be all that big a surprise when they strike back. We used to call it karma. The hallway was clear, as was the rest of the house. The rats had already stormed the beach of Normandy. That is, the house we vacated was surrounded, and rats were streaming through a half-dozen different weak spots they had found or made. The conscripted that were being forced to fight had taken spots all around the house to intercept us when we attempted to escape from the rodents. I wondered if the rats would consider them when they didn't find us. There were three bedraggled people standing pretty much right over the bomb shelter. We'd put some space between us and our pursuers, but it wasn't much, and they still had a drone up in the sky. There was a high probability we would be spotted if we made a run for it. "We can't stay here," Tommy said to me as I kept a lookout from the kitchen window. It afforded me a decent view of what was going on. I knew this. Bastley and Craig were going to be missed soon, and it wouldn't take much effort to redirect the animals or the humans. I supposed, wrongly, we could bounce back and forth between the homes. I shuddered at the thought of going back through that claustrophobic death trap, plus the rats. Yeah, they'd find us soon enough. Running in the great wide open sounded way better.
"Charge set?"
Sanders asked Biddeford.
"Charge?"
I asked. Hard to miss the conversation, considering we were in the same area.
"That house is wired to blow," Sanders said matter-of-factly.
"When did he do that?"
BT asked.
"It's been wired since we set up shop there," Sanders said.
"Blow it in two."
He was talking to Biddeford. We were in a house that was wired to explode instantly? I wasn't a fan of that. In fact, this group's whole M.O. was starting to worry me.
"Just like you are now," Winters was smiling.
I think my distress amused him. "You're sure you're going to blow the right one, right?" I asked.
"Don't worry, I'm a Marine," he told me. "I know my ABCs. That's House A," he pointed at one button, "and this one is B."
Biddeford was smiling, pointing at an identical button, a fingernail apart from the first.
"Fuck me, Biddy. This is House A," Winters said.
"Oh, that's right," Biddy exclaimed.
"They're just pulling our leg, right?"
BT asked.
"Fuck if I know," I answered.
"Guess we're going to find out." BT shook his head.
"Be ready to run when that goes off. It's an incendiary device. That house is going to burn hot and fast. Should give us the cover we need to get away from here, though. Oh, and you might want to step away from the window."
I moved like the house was already going up.
"These guys are hardcore, man," BT whispered to me. I didn't know if he meant it as a compliment or a warning.
"Got a couple of those people looking over here," Travis said. He was peeking through the window.
"More like heading over here now." Tommy went to look as well. "Everyone ready?" Sanders said. When no one dissented, he ordered Biddeford to blow it early.
I was still squinting out the window, but from a much safer distance. There was a flash in the kitchen, not much bigger than a lighter. Then there was a loud whooshing sound, like a huge dragon with an incredible wingspan had landed in the yard. Then, to top it off, this dragon breathed fire. There was a flaming explosion, large enough to blow holes all around the sculpture.
"Incendiary device, my ass," I said, as I hustled to keep up with the rapidly vacating tenants. I had caught glimpses of dozens, if not hundreds, of burning rats being jettisoned into the air like rodent-loaded Roman candles. Anyone within 10 feet of the house had been obliterated by glass, plastic, and wooden shrapnel, or set completely ablaze as fire clouds the size of pickup trucks blew out the windows and vaporized everything in their path. Flaming debris was raining down on us, and we were at least 100 feet away.
"Might have overdone it," Biddeford said as we continued on. "Couldn't wait to see what he'd come up with for the 4th of July.
"What now?" I asked Sanders, as we entered into a home a good mile from where we'd been. We were all winded, and BT looked exhausted, considering he'd carried Meredith the entire way.
"This Knox guy isn't an idiot, unfortunately. When no one runs out screaming, he's going to realize that we weren't in there.
He'll figure we're going for the hostages," Sanders said. "What else could we possibly be doing?"
We had to get there, and quick. He'd either kill them or they would be used to play parts in his fuck festival of a fantasy.
"How far are we?" I asked. "Another mile. I figure we have a maximum 15-minute window starting now. There's a car. I'd rather not use it, but time dictates otherwise."
"Let's go," I told him.
We were all ready.
"Just you," he said to me.
"What?"
I think it was BT. His voice was just louder than mine.
"Listen, it's a small car, but that's not the only reason. Us three have been fighting together for a long time. We know what the other is going to do almost before we do it. Now, no disrespect to your group. You obviously know what you're doing as well, or you wouldn't be here. But we don't know how you react to situations, and I will not unnecessarily risk the lives of my men. That half-second delay in coordinated effort could mean a death. The only reason I'm bringing Talbot is that he's a Marine, so we already know he has some reactions built in. Also, I need him to identify us to his family so they don't take a shot at us."
I was getting the stink eye from everyone in my group, like I had made that declaration.
"We'll be right back," I told them, following Winters out to the garage.
"Kylie, when we leave, head back to base. We'll follow when it's safe," Sanders told his wife.
Chapter 5. Mike Journal Entry 5.
Don't get me wrong, I was all about going to save my wife. But I wasn't overly thrilled about the three guys I was with. I'm sure they were more capable than any three of us. It was just that I didn't know them like they didn't know me. If I got into trouble, would I just be collateral damage to them? I was relatively sure they weren't bad guys. They most definitely weren't working with Knox, not unless this was some super elaborate trap to catch us. We'd already wasted a number of them and a truckload of rats. If they'd been with him, they would have just been waiting for us when we exited the other end of the bomb shelter. The car was a Prius, which I found slightly absurd. That was until Winters told me how little noise they made. Sanders was right. BT couldn't have fit in this thing with a tub of Vaseline and a crowbar. The drive was only a couple of minutes. Sanders pulled up to a tidy ranch-style home. Winters hopped out and pulled the garage door open as Sanders pulled in.
"It's the next street over. I'd like to have more time to recon, but I think this is going to be a hot zone soon. The idea here is smash and grab. You all right with that, Talbot?" Sanders asked.
"That's fairly normal for me," I told him. Winters smiled at that.
"Do you have this entire neighborhood scoped out?" I asked, not believing this home had been picked at random in the hopes that it was empty.
"It's how we've ensured our survival. It's basic. Well, it's imperative that we know our surroundings, don't you?"
Yeah, sure. Not much of a neighborhood where we were," I offered in defense. Although I realized we had not really even checked out the houses nearby. I had figured the risk too high. If people were keeping to themselves, I had been perfectly willing to leave them alone. Now I wasn't so sure as I watched the ease with which this group melted into their different locations. They were as adept as the Viet Cong striking out from their hidden caves and disappearing before an offensive could be mounted against them. Any village could be full of them or not. They owned the home field advantage.
I realized I wouldn't have known how exposed I would be attempting to save my own family if not for this commando squad. What's worse was to know surely would. The house we want is the next street over. I've got to believe we're going to encounter unfriendlies the moment we leave this yard. As always, I expect extreme prejudice when encountering them. Locate, close with, and destroy the enemy by fire and maneuver. Biddeford said the mission of the Marine Corps Rifle Squad verbatim. Back in my active duty days, I heard it a dozen times just before we were sent on missions. Gave me chills. "You any good with a pistol?" Sanders asked, as he handed me a suppressed Ruger 22-45. "I'm better with a rifle, but I'm no slouch." I took the weapon. The 22 wasn't my preferred caliber, but with a suppressor on it, dropping change would be louder than the firing of a bullet. If you weren't within 15 feet of the person on the business end, odds were you weren't going to hear it. That buys you a lot of time. I released the clip. I looked up to Sanders when I saw that it had no bullet in it. He had a smile that I figured signified the time when Biddy would place a neat hole in the back of my head. He had circled around, I presumed, to get into position. I clenched my rifle. If he somehow missed, I was going to make them pay. "Just checking your situational awareness," Sanders said, as he pulled out a small box of 50 rounds and tossed it my way. I released my rifle with one hand and let the sling hold it up as I caught the box, even over the throbbing of my heart, which I know was making my hand shake from the sheer pressure of the high-pumping blood. I filled the magazine and chambered around. "Big chance you just took, Major. Would anyone have told me I didn't have rounds had I not checked?" I asked. "You would have figured it out soon enough. Let's move out." Can't say I was a big fan of that type of thinking. We were going to get my family. I was going to thank them profusely and then put a shitload of miles between us. We quietly made our way across the yard. The house on the other side of the fence was a two-story job. If anyone decided to look through the window, we were there for all to observe. "Ah, come on," we heard just from the other side of the fence. I moved cautiously to the privacy divider, as did the rest of the group. There was an older man, maybe in his 60s, had his junk out and was beating it mercilessly. "Wait, hold on, not in the way you might think a male alone would. I mean, he was whacking his flaccid dick back and forth like they were in a bar fight with each other because his penis had just called the man's sister a whore. I couldn't for the life of me figure out what the hell he was doing until he spoke again. "Fucking prostate, I just want to piss." He was almost crying. The guy's prostate must have been the size of a watermelon because there was absolutely nothing coming out. Whatever biological problems he had ended with the insertion of a bullet into his head. Probably could be classified as a mercy killing. His eyes crossed. He grabbed his dick so hard I thought he was going to yank it off. I turned away to see Winters wincing at the sight. It's a fucked up world when you can't even piss in peace, I thought. Sanders moved a couple of the fence slats to the side so we could go through rather than over. These guys didn't miss much when it came to planning. Biddeford grabbed his handiwork and pulled him into the yard we'd just vacated. I wish I'd missed it, but the man's beleaguered bladder was now flowing like a fountain at a Vegas casino. Had to admit, finally relieved and dick in hand is not the worst way to go, but there was one of those sights you cannot unsee. "Talbot, Winters, you two inside. Biddy and I are going to check the perimeter." I followed Winters in through the open sliding glass door that peeing man most likely had exited from. "Hey, Tresser, you get your dry well to pump?" A voice laughed from upstairs. In typical guy fashion, it was laced with crude humor designed to discomfort the other. "Answer me, man. You know I get spooked when you do that shit." We were about to head upstairs and give him some answers. Maybe none he wanted to hear, but answers nonetheless. That was until another came around the corner. He had a turkey drumstick in one hand and an old car magazine in his other. "Hey, what are you doing here?" he asked, spitting out a mouthful of food. This guy wasn't going to join Menta anytime soon, but he still managed to drop what he was holding and run for his rifle, which was across the room. He'd probably left it right where he was going to eat some lunch and read.
My first shot missed completely. My second ripped into his shoulder, skidded up off the ball joint, and lodged into his neck. He reached up to swat it away. Blood began to pour through his fingers.
"What did you do?" he asked, feeling a little lightheaded.
He went to sit, but misjudged where exactly in the room he was, went down hard on his ass. We just stood there, watching him catch up with the situation.
"What the fuck?"
the upstairs man yelled from the top of the stairs, just as Winters placed two rounds in his chest, throwing him backwards into a wall. Winters motioned to me that he was going upstairs. He proceeded slowly with his pistol out in front of him. I did a quick check of the main floor, making sure there were no more surprises. I looked at the door that led to the basement, but I didn't want to check it until I was sure of Winters' status. He was down in less than a minute.
"Clear," he said. "You ready?"
He was pointing to the basement. I nodded. He pulled the door open, and I did a quick head in to see. There was nothing there, so I started down the stairs. I was thankful this basement was finished, as I did not want to get a knife in the back of my leg. Two things I noticed quick enough. The first was the blood. The other was an open window on the far side of the room. Someone had been in here, but it left when the festivities started upstairs. I turned the corner just enough to see what I had to imagine was a murdered family. Father, mother, and two kids, bludgeoned to death. A heavy mallet lay next to the bodies. This had been recent, a few hours at the most, as the blood had not yet had the opportunity to tack up yet. "Oh, man, that's the Mackenzies," Winters said, taking it in before turning away. I pointed to the window. There was gunfire. Out there, the fight was on in earnest. I raced back upstairs. I didn't need to vacate the house like Winters did. We had a strategic position and we'd fought to earn it. I could not see Biddeford or Sanders. The gunfire was to our right, the sound of heavy AK rounds. I didn't return fire, but I watched the machine gun wielder go down in a heap. "They're all around us," someone shouted. More gunfire, though I don't think this was directed at anyone in particular. More of a spray-and-pray type of approach. I saw a couple of people run through a yard across the street. They were going the wrong way if they wanted to engage us. I put the pistol down and switched to my rifle. The two that had been running stopped and dove down under a row of hedges. They would have been invisible had I not known exactly where to look. I lined up the shot. I was shooting at something the size of a dinner plate, basically. Just the top of a man's skull. Was using iron sights, but it was only a 50-yard shot. The trick was going to be getting his partner. I blew one well-placed round through the heavy bone plating, even watched as pieces of it peppered the shrubs around him. I moved my barrel an inch, estimating where the other man had been, and pulled the trigger 5 times in succession. I could not confirm the kill, but the shots had been dead on, and he had not had enough time to clear the area. If he wasn't dead outright, he would be soon. I looked up just in time to see someone taking a look from our target house. Pretty sure it was Justin, though he did not stay long enough for confirmation. "Looks clear," Winters said. "Maybe you should go and check it out," I told him. I said, "looks." My guess is they won't abandon their post so easily. Not because they're disciplined soldiers, but rather they're afraid of what Knox will do to them if he finds out they ran.
"Winters, this is Sanders. Come in."
"I hear you, sir," Winters replied. "I don't see anybody, and there's the sound of engines coming. Our window is shrinking. Tell Talbot it's go time."
Winters looked over at me.
"I heard shit."
Vesuvius looked like a mountain. The Titanic looked like an unsinkable ship, and that street looked devoid of enemies.
"Justin, it's me!"
I saw my son poke his head up.
"We need to move," I yelled to him. "There's more of them on the side of the house."
"Which side?" I asked.
"Both."
"We don't have time to clear the perimeter," Sanders said over the radio.
"We need to pull back."
The sound of the engines were nearly on top of us. "I have to go in, Winters," I said. If I left now, there would be nothing to come back to. Knox wasn't afraid of going into that house. He could burn it, send rats in, or his slave army made no difference to him. The whole thing was a plan to get me and BT out into the open, teach us a lesson, and show his people he was the brute in control. Always. I don't know how they could think that, though. He brought his entire shit show on the road to catch two guys. Seems like right there he'd already lost it. "Talbot, you heard the major," Winters said, though he knew how this was going to go. "It's my family, Winters. I can't leave them." "Negative, sir," he said into the radio. "Talbot is not leaving." To his credit, Sanders didn't lose it and start calling me every colorful name he could think of, and believe me, I'd heard a bunch. "Biddy and I will take on the newcomers. You two get those people out of there. Good luck. Out." Justin was looking out the window at us. I held up Winters' radio, wondering why Justin hadn't been using the one he had. He put his fists together and then twisted them in the broke signal. "How many?" I yelled across the street. He held up three fingers and pointed to the right, held up two fingers and pointed to the left, and held up four and pointed to the rear. Now, obviously, this was a fluid equation, and any or all of those people could move around the house easily enough. We had 9-on-2, and they were in somewhat defensive positions. I was not a fan of our odds. "Open the front door," I yelled. "You realize you're telling them what you're about to do, right?" Winters said as somewhat of a question. "Exactly. I need them out in the open waiting for me. If I try to run across the street now, they'll cut me down." "You're pretty smart for a Marine." "You're a Marine, too." "I just did it to pay for college. Should have already been out now, working," he responded. "What'd you go to school for?" "Business administration. What's that got to do with anything?" "What's a more practical skill these days?" I asked. "Running a company or shooting?" He grunted. I saw movement to the left. Someone was on the move. Someone in the house must have seen it as well, because the person running got lit up. A 3-round burst sent them immediately into whatever afterlife awaited them. Figured it had to be Tracy doing the shooting, because Justin was still visible from where I was. Multiple vehicles were heading to our position. After the shots were fired, that was the sound that dominated. Of course, that was right up until Sanders and Biddy unleashed their surprise. I felt my fillings move around inside my head from the explosion. "What the fuck was that?" I yelled over the ringing in my ears. "Claymore," Winters replied. There was a secondary explosion, and then multiple guns firing. "Winters, we can hold them for a couple of minutes, but there's at least 20 of them. You two had better make your move now," Biddy shouted over the radio. "We're up," Winters said. "This is my family. You don't need to do this," I told him one more time. "What kind of jarhead would I be if I ran?" "A live one, running a business one day," I mumbled, but we were already leaving the house by a side exit. I crossed the street at a full sprint, making a straight line for the hedges. In hindsight, I wish I'd picked a different spot. I did a stealing second base slide feet first into enough viscera to coat a truck bed. I mean, if you for some reason wanted to do something like that. The second man, whom I had assumed was dead, was not quite gone. He was flat on his back, looking up at the bottom of the bush, taking shallow breaths. Gasping, really. There was panic in his eyes as he struggled to get oxygen into his system. I'd put at least 2 rounds through his shoulder and one in his abdomen. From the sound he was making, one of the shoulder shots had traveled down and ruptured a lung. Blood-colored bubbles were forming around his mouth and running down his cheeks, some mixing with the tears that flowed from his eyes. There was a part of me that felt bad. He was basically a kid, maybe mid-20s. Maybe in his next life he'd choose a better path. Maybe not. Either way, I could not spare him any more of my thoughts. A man and a woman were running from the back, right toward me, though I don't think they knew I was there. I turned my head to see what they were looking at. It was Winters. He was coming, but in a much more methodical, tactical approach, which was usually all great and fine, but this time it was going to get him killed. I wasn't quite ready, but death waits for no one. I spun and barely got the pair's lower legs into my sights before I started firing. I don't give a fuck how long I live. I am always going to have a problem with female combatants. I don't know if it's sexist or misogynistic. It's certainly not meant to be, and it's certainly not because I believe them any less capable or deadly. There is no part of me that doesn't believe them to be the stronger of the sexes and perhaps even more adept at fighting. They certainly can be more vicious. Just think about the animal kingdom. I think it's the chivalry in me that finds harming a woman so fucking distasteful. In a world gone to shit, I hold it in my heart, for right or wrong, that women are the ones who will nurture it back. And here I am killing them. My first round hit her square in the shin, severed the bone so that when she tried to come down with her foot, it ended up being her splintered bone that cut through her muscle and stuck into the soft earth. She fell over screaming. Must admit, I winced at that. My next round hit her in the thigh. The final one traveled up into her chest and silenced her. For the briefest of seconds, I thought I had disturbed a hornet's nest as the pest whizzed by me. Then I realized it was suppressed rounds. I was pinned down and did not know where the shooter was. The man with the woman had dived for cover. I may not have seen it, but Winter sure did. He was advancing and firing on the man's position. "Clear!" he shouted. He was near to the low front porch as I emerged from my spot. There were now shots coming from the house as Tracy and Justin were covering our flanks. "We have got to get them out of there!" "Let's go!" I shouted up. "Can't, Dad!" Justin responded. Could see the first of the cars making it through Sanders' improvised roadblock. Had seconds. I retreated or I advanced. It was a no-brainer. I ran for the door. I heard Winter say this was a bad idea as he came in after me. I spun and took a couple of hasty shots at the lead car. Fucked up the hood, and I think I winged the front seat passenger. The driver veered hard to the right and across the street. 5 people poured out of it, but we got the door shut before their return fire found us. By the time they were done shooting the door, it had been completely blown from its hinges, and the holy hunk was lying on the ground. "Now what?" Winters asked, as we saw another car pull up. "I'm thinking we should head upstairs. Anybody starts poking their heads in the windows on this first floor, we could be in some trouble," I said to him. The only problem was the stairway was in complete view of the outside, considering that the door was now a floor mat. "There's like 10 guns pointing at this house," Winters said, having poked his head high enough to see out. "We won't make it up 3 steps." "Who's up there, Justin?" I asked. "Me, Mom, Grandma, Angel, Evelyn, and all the animals." In terms of being the fastest, most nimble, and ready to fight, I had been dealt a bad hand. I let my head rest on the ground for a moment. "That bad?" Winters whispered. "One bad-kneed senior citizen, a little girl, a baby, a surly cat, one slow-poke English bully, and a hyper-little dog. My wife, son, and one of the dogs can take care of themselves. We'll have to carry everyone else." "Leave shit little for firepower if we're busy playing delivery men," he replied. "Winters, more coming your way. We've had to pull back before we got overrun. We won't leave you out to dry." "Out," Sanders said. "He'll be back," Winters told me. "Better be soon," I said, as I saw a large group coming toward the house. They were indeed going to surround us. We were pop-up targets in a shooting gallery. "Downstairs," I pointed behind us. "I like that idea less," he said, though he followed me as we low-crawled around and to the door that led down. A few bullets ricocheted in the house. As of yet, I didn't think we were targeted. I reached up and twisted the handle to the door, never even stopped for a second to think about what I would do if there was a zombie or an enemy on the stairs. I suppose I could have slammed the door shut, but I was in a pretty compromising position. I crawled down 2 steps until I felt confident enough to pull my legs in and get my feet up under me. Winters was right behind me. He pulled the door shut quietly. "I've spent an inordinate amount of my time with you in basements. This a normal thing with you?" "Not really. You've just been extraordinarily lucky." "I don't feel lucky," he said as he went down a few more stairs. "Seems like I've heard that before." We quickly went into the basement, where we saw shadows moving past some of the windows. I froze when a face pressed up against the glass. The man was peering intently and overconfidently. Must have had something to do with how dingy the lighting was in here, because he never registered the fact that he was staring straight at me. I was slowly raising my rifle. Suck place to get shot. The face, I mean.
Don't, Winters whispered. We'll lose our element of surprise.
Yeah, we wouldn't want to lose that, I said, doing my best impression of a statue. The face finally stood. I took a deep breath, and we moved away from the staircase into a shelf, stacked high with paint cans and motor oil. Any chance there's a bunker in this house, too? He shook his head. Help me move this away from the wall. I saw what he was doing. We could hide behind it, use it as cover and concealment. It's the only thing in the basement. Don't you think it'll be pretty obvious where we're hiding? Like you said, it's the only thing in the basement. I mean, unless you want to hide behind the stanchion poles. The loaded down shelves were heavier than they looked, and the metal framing was flimsier than it appeared. I was more than half convinced the whole thing was either going to tip or collapse as we slid it about a foot away from the wall. Yeah, that doesn't look suspicious, I said when I looked at our handiwork. Well, let's see. Since your actions have directly led us into this predicament, I'm all ears if you've got something better. And I didn't. I looked around, but it was one giant square of concrete with hardly any light coming in. I was staying close to the walls, hoping for some sort of crawl space or box of grenades. Didn't find either. The grayish light was blocked out as someone once again came up to the window. That could only mean they weren't satisfied no one was in here. I couldn't tell from my angle if it was the same person. I stayed close to the wall and made my way to the window. I could just see Winters over by the shelves. Hard to say, but I don't think he was all that thrilled with what I was doing. The light was completely gone, and then there was a muffled crack as the man had put something up against the glass and then broke it. He was coming in. As soon as he poked his head in, I was as good as caught. I reached down and grabbed my K-bar, not at all happy with what was about to go down. He took his sweet-ass time about it. He must have thought he would just sneak in down here and make his way up to where the people were. Winters was shaking his head back and forth with his face pulled in like he was four, and I was trying to give him an extra heaping of gross cough syrup. The muzzle of a rifle came through first, then a hand, an arm, finally the crowning of a head, like the world's largest baby being birthed, gun first, which would be a handy mutation for our next generation. I was in motion the second his head showed. He never even had the chance to register my presence as I drove my knife into his temple. His body went rigid, then limp, as I pulled it through and dropped him to the ground. His muscles convulsed as I pulled the blade free. I hoped that the action looked as if he had come in on his own. So far, so good. No alarm had been sounded, and no one else was following. Either he'd come in solo as part of a plan to sneak up on us, or there was indeed suspicion, and he was the guinea pig. I grabbed his rifle. It was tough to tell without proper lighting, but I think it was an Uzi, and he had a couple of extended mags on him. Well, that was mine now, at least. We can't stay here, Winters had come over. I couldn't have agreed with him more. We were in a shit spot. Just then, the light in the basement went to nearly zero as four of the five windows were blocked. Down! I grabbed him, just as all the windows broke out. Dozens, hundreds of rounds were blown through as they shot at every conceivable angle they could, hoping to kill us. I thought my ears were going to bleed with how loud it was in there. Chunks of concrete were raining down on us. Dust and smoke threatened to choke our airways. It was so thick I could not see my hand in front of my face. When it mercifully stopped, I was not grateful to be alive. I was angry, like pissed-off, hornet-swarming angry. I stood up and pointed toward one of the murky fingers of light filtering in through the window and fired. There was a surprised cry, and then a thud as I'd shot whoever had been there. I was able to take out one more in this manner before they realized they had not killed their targets, and now they were on the docket.
"Now let's go," I told Winters, reaching down and tapping him on the shoulder. I ran up the stairs and into two men that had the misfortune of being the vanguard. I didn't even bother aiming. Anything that can shoot 600 rounds a minute doesn't need much in the way of that. In half a magazine, I had riddled each of them with half dozen rounds. More than enough to do the job. "Up the stairs, go," I told Winters, who didn't need any more prompting as I switched out magazines. I unloaded the entire new clip out the front door in 2, maybe 3 seconds. Didn't really count. It was enough time for Winters to make it up and gave me a window as those outside had dived for cover as I made my suicide covering fire. I was already in the upstairs landing by the time returning fire made it into the house. Tracy was standing in the hallway. When I got my wind back, I gave her a hug that threatened to meld us. "Took you long enough?" She was kidding. I could see the strain in her features from the ordeal.
You're fucking crazy. What the fuck is wrong with you?" Winters asked, as Justin helped him up off the floor.
"Marines," I answered calmly. "The Marines did that to me."
"Bullshit. You can maybe tell that to those around you that have never served, but I am a Marine, and I can tell you right now you're fucking certifiable."
He was genuinely upset.
"You get used to him," Justin said in my defense.
"Or dead," Winters added.
"Everyone all right?" I asked.
I got nods all around. Henry was wagging his stumpy little tail, his ass shaking. He was so happy to see me. If it wouldn't have cost me some funny looks, I would have wagged my ass too in light greeting.
"Good to see you too." I got down on my haunches and grabbed his massive head and hugged it tightly and then scratched behind his ear.
Justin got Winters a bottle of water and I hoped a Valium. He was still looking pretty stupefied. Carol was looking a little rough. This on-the-road shit was hard on us all, but these circumstances brought it to a whole other level.
"How are you holding up?" I asked quietly.
"I've been better. I sure could use a drink."
"You and me both," I told her. "We'll get out of this, and I'll raid a liquor store for you." She grabbed my hand before I could leave.
"Michael, I don't know how much more of this I can handle."
The look in her eye was one I'd seen before. It was of a person giving up, and for reasonable cause. There comes a point in a lot of people's lives where the accumulated weight of all things lost begins to bow and then break the spirit. Few ever recover. Once you start down that spiral, the inertia is too great to overcome, especially when you don't have anyone else depending on you to go on. "We'll get out of this, Carol. We will get to Aetna Station. It will almost be normal. I just want to go home, to be buried on the farm."
"Nobody is getting buried," I told her forcibly. It was one thing if she wanted to cash in her chips, but that kind of mood could and would spill over, crushing all morale as it went.
"Talbot, I am getting so fucking sick of you."
This was shouted over a speaker. "Great, Knox is here," I said, as I tried to get a peek out the window.
"I haven't quite figured out why you won't just die. It would make my life a whole lot simpler if you did."
"Mine too," Winters said quietly.
"I heard that," I told him. He shrugged.
"I've lost a lot of good people since coming across your sorry ass. That doesn't even bring into account all of my wasted resources. Do you have any fucking concept of how difficult and how long it takes to round up that many fighters and zombies? And the rats? I can't stand rats, but one of my people has this affinity for them. Knows how to make them do things. It's weird, I'll grant you, but I let him do it because, well, everyone hates rats. Disgusting little creatures. If you could just let them peel your face off and maybe chew through your jugular, I'd seriously owe you one."
"This guy might be more off his rocker than you," Winters said.
"I think he was army," I told him.
Winters made an face.
"You come out right now, Talbot, hands held high. I'll put one in your head and that will be it. Your people will be decently cared for. Not gonna say great. Not for a while, anyway. They'll start at the bottom of the hierarchy ladder, just like all new recruits. You can't just force a former Soviet bloc country to come over to NATO and then hand them the nuclear sequence.
They'll have to prove themselves in a variety of ways. Won't be easy, but everyone will have their place. Well, except for you, because you'll be rotting out on the front stoop. But damn it, man, those you care for will be alive.
Is serious? Winters asked.
You wouldn't think so, but yeah, I replied. Deneau said you wouldn't capitulate. I heard the words, and this was on me. There was never a part of me that didn't figure she would cross me, cross us. It was always just a matter of when. Why I hadn't simply ripped her throat out when she was in my grasp eludes me.
Time's up! Sounded like a battalion's worth of tanks were driving up on us.
Zombies! Justin was in one of the bedrooms as he called out.
I hope I don't see you on the other side, Talbot. Not sure why I would, as I'm the one doing God's work, lifting the helpless up and bringing them along with me. I once read that the meek will inherit the earth. What a load of horse shit that was. It's the ones willing to take chances, to force others to see their visions. Those will be the ones to own the world, and that is what I intend on doing. Gonna leave you a few hundred presents. Take my advice. Just let it happen. Oh, and I got this for you, too. He started laughing.
No! Mad Jack yelled. I ran to the window, heedless of a sniper's bullet. Mad Jack had been pushed out of the cab of a large pickup. His hands were handcuffed behind him, and his face had been beaten badly.
This loser one of yours, Talbot?
Knox laughed again. Run, I said, barely above a whisper. Mad Jack was just standing there. The dozens of zombies in the general vicinity had not noticed him yet, but it was only a matter of seconds.
Run, I yelled.
He looked up, his eyes pleading for help. I turned and was heading for the stairs. Winters and Justin were right behind me. By the time I got to the front door, MJ had only moved enough to try and get back into the truck.
This is happening because of you, Talbot, Knox said. And oh yeah, I have your cool toy now.
Mad Jack fell over into the street as the truck sped away. He'd most definitely attracted the attention of the zombies now. He was sobbing on the ground. I didn't have time to ask why he wasn't running. All I could do now was try and kill all the zombies near him and see if we could attempt a rescue. Time and distance were not on our side. Even as we were killing them, more were taking their place. And as we moved forward, we realized that zombies were taking flanks to us. Soon they would envelop us and cut us off from our only avenue of escape. Then I noticed something. They were within striking distance of Mad Jack. Could have taken him a few times by now. Yet they didn't. That struck me as extremely fortunate. Until I figured why that was. As long as he was still alive, we would keep trying to get to him, and that would give the other zombies enough time to blanket us, not to mention more flesh for all. If he were to be bitten and die, there would be no sense in a rescue attempt, and we'd proceed with defensive maneuvers. We were being fished. And Mad Jack was the lure. I don't know why one of the zombies jumped the gun, but he probably saved our lives. Well, some of them. He bit into Mad Jack's head, ripping away a chunk of scalp the size of a hand. Mad Jack's scream was savage. Blood poured down his face and flew from his mouth as it hit the expelling air. I shot that zombie, but the spilling of blood was too much for those around him. They dove in like sharks to chum. A lump the size of a fist formed in my throat as I watched the man be torn apart. I ran when Justin urged me to go, but I felt like I was in a tunnel. Everything was all echoey and surreal. He wasn't supposed to die. He was one of the good guys, one of the people that was going to find a way to fix this world, to set it back to something approaching normal. I heard one final gurgle for life as we just made it into the house, the speeders fast on our heels. Tracy leaned over the railing to take out a couple of the closer ones. I pushed everyone into the master bedroom and shut the door. We could barricade for a while at least. As expected, the door was getting slammed up against, and it was not of the extra-strength variety, just a common hollow core door. I reached for Tracy. I wanted to sob into her shoulder for a month, maybe more. "He was a good man," she said to me, as she gently pushed me away. "He was," I said. And I knew what she'd meant with those words and that action. He was indeed a good man, and we would mourn for him later, but right now there were still all the rest of us in this room that needed my utmost consideration. The problem was I didn't have any clue of what we needed to do or even what we could do. Winters went over to the window. "What about the roof?" he asked. "What about it?" I asked, although I already knew what he was asking. I poked my head out. It would be a stretch, but it would be possible to reach the low-hanging eave. "Look around, Winters. How many of us are going to make that?" "What about going through the ceiling?" Justin asked, as we all looked up at the drywall. "No access in the closet?" I asked. He shook his head. "Hallway." "Through the ceiling it is, then." The door was being punished. We heard more than one crack. The only thing holding it in place was the dresser we had shoved up against it, which we were now going to have to stand on so we could rip down some drywall and make good our escape. I jabbed my knife up and through, not thrilled to be using it like this, but desperate times and all, so here went the desperate measures. The dresser was rocking back and forth as the zombies kept slamming into the door. Winters and Justin were leaning in on our side, attempting to keep me from being knocked off. I dropped a fist-sized chunk on top of Winter's head. He didn't say anything as I sawed away. Fine particles drifted down at first, and then fell away in clumps. "Is that vermiculite?" Winters asked. I didn't say anything as I was making a hole big enough to fit us through, breathing in more dust than air just then. "It is," he said, alarmed. "That could contain asbestos." Right then, a zombie arm blew through the door and was brushing up against my leg. "Time to think short-term, kid," I told him, as I shifted to avoid the dirty, scabbed-over hand and arm from clenching my ankle. When the owner of that arm pulled back and decided to get a view of what he was seeking, that was when the activity out in the hallway picked up. He must have communicated to those around him that there were some live ones inside. I grabbed onto a couple of the 2x8 joist beams that crossed the house and pulled myself up to get a better look at the attic. Couldn't see much past the hole I'd cut out. This place made the basement look like downtown Tokyo on New Year's. Justin tapped my leg with a small flashlight. I dropped down to grab it before going back up. It was as barren as the basement had been. A 7-foot-wide section the entire length of the house. Had some plywood down on it. At least we wouldn't have to do a balancing act on the joists as we thought out our next plan. I dropped back down onto the dresser, not at all happy to see face-sized holes behind it. Zombies were tearing at the door with their hands and their mouths. "Tracy, let's go." "The kids? The animals?" she asked. "I'll need to hand them up to you." She looked over at Henry. "I'll send Justin up to help you when we get to him," I told her. Got her through easy enough. Next was Angel, who was still crying about Mad Jack, and would be for a long time. They had developed a relationship, those two. When he wasn't trying to figure out ways to make cold fusion bombs, they could generally be found playing board games. It took Tracy longer than I'd wanted for her to walk the child over to a safe area and do her best to calm her down. I could hear her talking. "I'm going to bring Avalyn over to you real soon, honey. Will you be able to watch her while I get the animals up here?" There was now officially less of the upper half of the door still in place. "Tracy, no time!" I shouted up. She came back just as Justin handed me the baby. I was doing my best to shield her from the zombies, but she peeked around anyway. She let out a blood-curdling scream that turned into a racked cry. But strangely enough, I think she confused the hell out of the zombies because they stopped what they were doing for a moment to watch her. I took full advantage of the lull in activity. By lull, I mean a solid minute. They just stared through the holes in the door. Could be useful. Could be the beginning of the end of our friendly relationship with Avalyn, or could be something more. I would have to think on this later.
Maybe run it past some of the group.
Get the animals up first, Carol told Winters as he helped her up.
That's not really my preferred order, I told her. She gave me a look, and then I realized just exactly where Tracy had got her signature steely gaze. I couldn't refuse her. Patches was easy enough. She was already on the